don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The Streets Don't Love You Back.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is March 13th, 2013. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. Tonight we have a great show for you. We have an author, author of Righting My Wrong, Shaka Shingor from Detroit, Michigan. And this, I'm going to quote from him what he says. 21 years ago, at the age of 19, I shot and killed a man. I was a young drug dealer with a quick temper. He showed up at my doorstep at 2 in the morning, uninvited. We exchanged words, and before I knew it, I had pulled out my pistol and started shooting. He was hit multiple times and died later at the hospital. I went on the run for 2 days before I was arrested and charged with open murder. For years, as I served out my sentence for second-degree murder, I blamed everybody else but myself for the decision. I made that fateful night. I was bitter and angry and hurting inside from the innocence lost. It wasn't until I started writing about the pain of my childhood and the things I experienced selling drugs on the unforgiving streets of Detroit that I started to release the anger and began to heal deep emotional wounds. Writing about my wrongs was the first of many steps that I took to atone for taking a man's life. Through the transformative power of writing, I have accepted responsibility for my decisions and have used my experience to help others avoid the path that I took in my youth. This is my story, and it is my hope that by righting my wrongs, I can help others right their wrongs. So we're going to welcome him to the show in just 1 minute. But before we do that, let me welcome Boyd to the show.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and we thank everybody for always tuning in to our worldwide radio show. And tonight, like my missus said, we got a great, great guest, and I'm honored and pleased to say that my man Shaka is a friend of the team, and we support him 1,000. And once again, I would just like to give a shout-out to all our soldiers in prison, in 150 prisons that the movement is in. And we'd like to give a shout-out to all our soldiers out here in the street that's educating our kids about gangs, drugs, and violence, and there's a better way now. So without that being said, we're going to go over to our guest now, and we want him to formally introduce himself and get ready, ladies and gentlemen, for a great, great show.
Hey, how's everybody doing? Once again, I want to thank my man Rob and Lucinda for having me as always. Y'all have been such a great support base for me, the work that I do out here in the city of Detroit. And it's always an honor to be, you know, on y'all's show.
Well, we're happy to have you. I think this is maybe the third time you've been on our show as a guest. And, you know, every time you write a new book and you're doing great things out here, we got to bring you back on so you can share that with everybody. Because like you said, I read your introduction, you know, your little piece here before we brought you on, and, you know, you live that street life, and so your story is so powerful and your testimony is so great that we have to keep sharing it because, you know, you came from the bottom, you came from the streets, you know what it was like to be out there, do that, and then to spend that many years in the prison and come out in your right mind, but not only to come out, but to do what you're doing right now, Shaka, to help the youth in your state and your community. You know, you have just done so much, and it's so awesome. You know, we have to share that with the world. So thank you so much for coming on the show tonight once again.
Oh, it's an honor. You know, I think it's important to share the realities of being, you know, growing up in street culture and the real consequences. A lot of times, you know, we see these things glorified in media. We see them glorified in hip-hop culture. And on the flip side of that, you rarely hear people talk about the real-life consequences of making those poor decisions and not really thinking through the end result of picking up that gun and pulling the trigger and how that's something that you end up living with for the rest of your life. So it's really important that I do this work and share my testimony with the hopes that, you know, some other young man or woman will think a lot, you know, more about their decisions and don't get caught up in that same culture I got caught up in.
Exactly. Why don't you go back to the very beginning, Shaka, and let the audience hear a little bit about your life as a teenager, a young adult, and what you were going through and what happened.
So, you know, I grew up in, like, the ideal family. You know, I had a, you know, father that's been present in my life forever, and, you know, we had pretty much the American dream, you know. My mother and my father living together. We grew up on the east side of Detroit and grew up in what was considered a working-class neighborhood. But tragically and unfortunately, you know, my parents went through a tumultuous divorce. And when they separated, you know, I didn't really know how to cope with our family being torn apart. And, you know, me and my mother, we had some issues that it was really hard for me to deal with. And so I would run away, and I ended up running away and getting caught up in the streets and older, more seasoned street, you know, hustler. He introduced me to the crack trade. And, you know, at like 13 years old, I was deeply immersed in this very volatile, very insidious culture. And, you know, within the first 6 months of me being in that culture, you know, I was robbed at gunpoint, beaten nearly to death, and, you know, childhood friend murdered, and, you know, watched my older brother get shot. Not right there, but just really, you know, being there when after he got shot, and then I was shot 3 times at the age of 17, and 14 months after being shot, well, within the 14-month time frame of being shot, I ended up shooting 4 different people, and tragically, the 4th person died, and I was subsequently sentenced to 17 to 40 years in prison, and ultimately served 19 years in prison.
Wow, that's a long time to be in prison, and that's a whole different world. Been out here.
Yeah, it's really you know, prison. I think that prison, as it exists today, is one of America's greatest shames. It's a new form of slavery, and unfortunately, a lot of us volunteer ourselves for that reality. And the reason I call it one of America's biggest shames is that there is nothing that prepares people for a positive return to society. And so you're literally just warehoused amongst other people who've been affected by post-traumatic stress disorder, growing up in these very volatile, abusive environments. So that cycle continues to repeat itself, and then they're released and, you know, let back out into society without having any sense of what it takes to to adjust to real life as an asset as opposed to a liability.
My man. So, hey, Stock, I want you to also let the people know, man, after your 19 years of incarceration away from the streets and the world, man, how was it your transformation coming back into this world, man, that had changed a million times over from when you left the street?
It was literally like walking into a whole new universe. I mean, everything had changed. Technology had advanced beyond my wildest imagination. I mean, some of the things that, you know, people who were free had the fortune of experiencing. You know, for me, it was just like walking into an episode of the Jetsons. You know, I came out here, and you got smartphones, you got, you know, Skype, and you actually talk to people face-to-face through the TV screen. And, you know, I had only seen those things like that on the Jetsons. And so it was really a very difficult transitioning back to society because none of those things exist in prison. You know, you don't have access to internet, you don't have access to social media or, you know, smart technology. And so I had to really, like, had a super fast learning curve. I had to learn everything about the world as it exists now as opposed to what it exists prior to my incarceration. And in addition to that, I really had to develop social skills and learn how to interact with people on a human level and just an everyday level and, you know, not, you know, giving in to the anxiety that I would experience when people were standing too close to me or being in real crowded spaces in prison. You know, that's where stabbings and you know, bludgeonings and things like that take place. And so coming out here to the real world where, you know, a human can literally come and tap you on the shoulder and mean you no harm, You know, that was a major adjustment for me. And then I was like, you know, when I went in, I was 1 month into my 19th birthday. I came out. I was 38 years old, and so I had never had a driver's license, had never owned a car legally. I mean, I bought cars selling drugs, but they was always in somebody else's name and things along those lines. So it was just a major adjustment, you know, just adjusting to the reality that society really don't care that you've been gone, you know, all those years. You still have bills to pay. You still have to figure out how to value it for yourself. And, you know, tragically, unemployment is realistic for people who were incarcerated, as well as housing discrimination and things like that. So just adjusting to the fact that I'm basically part of a new class structure, you know, those who were formerly incarcerated. And it's really similar to Jim Crow. You know, we're discriminated against. We're not given the tools that's necessary to adjust to society. So if you don't prepare for it prior to getting out, then, you know, chances are you're going to return to what you know, which is street life and street culture.
My man. And, you know, Shaka, I also want to ask you, man, because like I say, you know, when you got out, we met each other and start conversing on the Facebook and on the phone, you know, and let these youths and these adults understand, man, that going to prison, it don't make you no hero, man. Break that down for them, Shaka.
Yeah, you know, it's, to me, the one of the saddest things is that we, you know, hip-hop and popular culture has made, you know, the streets seem alluring, this whole idea of street credibility. But in reality, when you forfeit your life, it's pretty much like you're a fool. I mean, and like I tell the kids, you know, it's not, when I mentor kids, I don't try to scare them. I don't do the scare straight program. I think that's ridiculous, especially if you grew up in a city like Detroit, where people get killed every day and you know, you got, you know, shootouts on the block. So it's nothing scary than walking the streets of Detroit. My thing is that at some point in your life, you will wake up and realize that you forfeited the best of who you are. You know, I can't never go get my teens back. I can't get my 20s back. You know, a lot of the things that we take for granted, you know, I didn't experience. You know, I never experienced that childhood love. I never experienced, you know, the ups and downs and trials and tribulations of young adulthood. And when you realize that you're giving that up, you're giving up your freedom, and then you're going to have that stigma attached to you. You know, like even though I served 19 years in prison, I actually have a life sentence, because forever I'm going to be stigmatized by the fact that I have a felony on my record, but also I have to carry the burden that I took a man's life and that I've caused his family harm. And, you know, that's something that's a very painful pill to swallow, and there's nothing hot about that. There's nothing slick about it. There's nothing cool about it, you know. And it's one of those things where, you know, in 3 seconds I've really affected and impacted two families and devastated, you know, people. So, you know, it's definitely nothing hot about that.
My man. And one more question, Shaka, before I hand it over to the missus. I just wanted to say, man, you know, it's always an honor and a pleasure to have you here, man. And I want you to let people know about this new book, man, Righting My Wrongs. And I just wanted to also tell you, you know, we've been promoting that, and a few people asked where to get that book from, man. So I told them to tune into the show tonight and that you would tell them where to go cop that great educational book at, man. So before we move any further, man, let the viewers know where to go cop that great book at.
Oh, yeah, they can definitely go to shakasengor.com. That's shakasengor.com. And the new book, this is probably one of my most challenging writing. You know, I write fiction, but, you know, it was time. You know, when I was going in these classrooms and I'm dealing with these kids who come from these hard struggle backgrounds and listening to educators and administrators who really don't understand them, I felt like, you know what, it was time for me to tell my story and to tell it from a real perspective, not the glorified, you know, street legend perspective, but from a real honest face. And, you know, so Righting My Wrongs is a very emotional book. Some of the feedback I've been getting over the last few weeks since the release is that it's made a lot of people really examine some of the things that they experience. You know, and a lot of us, we carry hurt, we carry pain, we carry disappointments. The levels of abuse is unimaginable. And just experiencing it as a mentor, when, you know, you get kids that open up to you and talk about how they've been sexually abused, how they've been physically abused. I just felt like, you know, sharing my story was the right thing to do. And it's definitely one of the hardest things because, I mean, I have to deal with issues related to, you know, the relationship I have with my mother. I have to deal with abandonment issues that I experienced when I was incarcerated. I had to be very honest about, you know, my so-called friends who abandoned me. And that wasn't easy to do because, you know, at this point in my life, I don't want to hurt anybody. But what I realized is that if I can save young people by being honest, then it's really important for me to do that. Like, that's more important than, you know, than sparing somebody's feelings from my past. And so, you know, I put it all on the line. I talked about some things in my life that I had never disclosed publicly. And the reason I did is because I want parents, I want educators, I want administrators, policymakers, politicians to understand that we are at a crisis level when it comes to our kids, and it takes a certain level of courage to really address that. And we have a responsibility to be honest with them about what this life and this culture is and how it really can devastate their lives. And more importantly, I want those people to really understand where these kids are coming from. Like, no child wakes up and be like, you know what, I'm going to go kill somebody today. Like, it's things that happen to children that make them feel like I have to defend myself. I feel safer carrying a gun. And, I mean, if anybody with any inkling of common sense would understand that a child carrying a gun isn't the wisest ingredients for success.
My man, you know, and Shock Man, like I say, coming from a young man who went in prison as a young guy and come out as a man, you know, like I tell these kids, you know, it's a guarantee when you go in front of that judge and he hit that hammer and he say 20 to 40 a life, you're on your way to the gate, you know what I mean? But it's right. Never no guarantee you coming out that gate alive, you know? So explain that to these kids, Shock.
Well, you know, I stay in contact with my guys that's incarcerated, and I think it's important to do so because, you know, those guys that count on me, I'm like their last bastion of hope. And just the other day, you know, there was an article printed about a guy who got beat to death in prison. And, you know, I know guys who, you know, have suffered from mental illness while they was in prison. Some guys committed suicide. Some guys were murdered. Some guys got caught life sentences while they was incarcerated because if you commit a crime in prison, you will get prosecuted and end up serving more time. That's actually how I ended up serving 19 years. I caught another case while I was incarcerated, and I ended up serving, for that particular case, I served 4.5 years in solitary confinement. And in solitary confinement, I mean, you just see so many guys who suffer from mental illness and just that deterioration of their mind because they can't cope with the decisions that they made. And so, I caution the youth that I deal with that, you know, you may go in, but they don't guarantee that you will come out. And even if you come out, there's no guarantee that you'll come out with your sanity and your humanity intact because it's very challenging. It's one of the toughest mental environments you can imagine. Like, you can't survive prison to come out sane and human without having a certain type of mental strength. And it's sad that it takes for some guys to wake up in prison and realize the strength that they do have, but unfortunately a lot of guys never get that. And so they come out, they're broken men, they're a shell of themselves, and it's just really tragic. Like, it's nothing cool about going to prison. It's nothing cool about coming home and wearing your little wife beater like, you know, that like you've accomplished something. In reality, you haven't accomplished anything but a bunch of hurt and pain for multiple families.
My man. And I'm going to pass the mic over to the message, Shock, and we thank you again for the great message, man. And your Right My Wrong, that is your biography. Is that correct, Shock?
Yes, it's my memoir. So it's a memoir. It's kind of like a shorter version of a autobiography.
Okay.
But it's my real-life account of what happened in the streets, what I went through as a teen, and what I went through during my 19 years of incarceration.
My man. All right, we thank you, Shock. I'll pass it to the missus.
All right. I wanted you to talk a little bit more to the youth. You know, we're trying to prevent them from doing those things that would lead into incarceration. Tell us a little bit about what made you so angry as a teenager, and And then tell us a little bit about how old you were when you started selling drugs and what that kind of life, what kind of a person that kind, that life made you become.
So I grew up, you know, my greatest goal and my ambition growing up was to be a doctor. And unfortunately, things didn't happen like that. And so, you know, when my parents divorced and they separated, you know, my mother, she pretty much gave up on me. And so the anger really was just a deep-rooted sadness and a deep-rooted feeling of being unloved and feeling insecure because, I mean, I always felt like it was something wrong with me. Like, how can a mother not love her child? And that manifested as anger because I didn't have an answer. You know, I couldn't understand why my mother rejected me. And it was one of the hardest things. And it's still one of the things I deal with to this day. It's been very hard for me to receive love because, you know, I've never got that type of love from my mother. And so, you know, that makes children vulnerable. And like, that's one of the things that adults don't think about is that when you don't love and nurture your child, it makes them susceptible to people in the streets who offer this distorted concept of love. And so when I was out there on the streets and didn't have nowhere to go, the first person that really offered me an opportunity to provide shelter as well as finance, you know, he was a drug dealer. And so at 13 years old, you know, I'm on the east side of Detroit at the beginning of the crack trade. And I'm making all of this money, but at the same time, it's just this emotional emptiness inside because of that lack of love and care and, you know, concern for my mother. And that was one of the hardest things for me to write about. It was one of the hardest things for me to deal with, and it's still one of the hardest things for me to deal with in my day-to-day life.
Right. Now, you made a comment. I read it somewhere. I don't know if it was on your Facebook or website or maybe on part of your book. But you said part of what was able to get you through those years in prison were getting letters from your father.
Right. Yeah, my father is hands down to me. I just think he embodies what fatherhood is. He embodies what manhood is. And, you know, even though he wasn't able to rescue me from the street, he was able to provide me with the type of emotional support, spiritual support and mental balance that I needed to survive prison. And one thing he always encouraged me, and even prior to going to prison, he was like, you know, if you educate yourself, that's something no one can ever take from you.
Right.
And, you know, he never let me off the hook. So he had rules. When I was in the streets, like when I got caught up, he would never bail me out. You know, he was like, I will come see you, but I'm never going to bail you out because if I bail you out, then I'm going to enable you to continue to do the things that you do, and it won't teach you any responsibility. And for a long time, I was very angry about that. But, you know, as I evolved as a man, you know, I learned to understand that, you know, basically he was teaching me the lesson that whatever decision you make in life, you have to be man enough or woman enough to deal with the consequences that come with those decisions.
Well, no, that's tough love.
I mean,
you know?
It's real. I don't even look at it as tough love. I just look at it as just genuine love. Like, real love is that you want to do what's in the best interest of the person that you love, you know. And if you enable them and you don't let them be responsible for their decisions, then you basically handicap them for the rest of their lives. And, you know, one of the things that I talk to the students that I mentor about is this. I have, like, a couple of rules to the class. I mentor through literature. And one of the rules and the most important rule is that when you walk in my class, you take all excuses off the table. So, like, I don't care if your mom was out, you know, selling her body the night before. That's not an excuse for you not to show up and perform because at the end of the day, society isn't going to judge you based on your mother. It's going to judge you based on your performance. And, you know, that's what my father represented to me. He was like, you know, if you make these decisions, be man enough to live with them. You know, and one thing he can attest to, and anybody else in my family, and anybody that knows me, is I've never blamed anybody for the decisions I made. I've dealt with them. I accepted responsibility. And I've lived my life according to whatever decisions I made, good or bad.
Exactly. Hey, Shaka, we have a caller on the line, and we're going to go ahead and get that call and see if they have a question or want to make a comment. And this is a 602 area code, so we're going to bring you on. And, caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Welcome to the show. Caller,
yeah, this
are you
is
there?
Lonel, Coach L. This is Coach L. Lonel.
Hotel, welcome to the show. Glad you could call
us. Hey, how's it going? I'm just really tuning in. I just hear wonderful things.
and positive things. And I didn't know I was going to be live on the air, but it's all good. I'm here now. So the things that he's actually talking about is some real stuff, man. And I witnessed some of that stuff within my family from being pimps and families being home. And it's just I see everything that he's talking about, and I can relate to a lot of things that he's talking about. But at the same time, I feel that at the age that I'm at right now, I can lead the youth to not be led that way. And it's hard to do everything by myself. And that's why I feel that as once I build these young men up to be great men, then they can teach the youth to actually do the same thing as with me. And I'm
trying to start a program where I can actually bring these young kids into sports. And sports is the main key to most of these kids out here that are lost. And this is pretty much the best way I can give back to the youth. But at the same time, I I'm trying to do the best I can. And I found a way that I can try to bring the kids closer to me is by not being flashy, but by doing great things to show them I can turn anybody into a great athlete by teaching them the right things to say, like how to carry themselves, how to carry your mom, how to, you know what I'm saying, talk to your dad, help them as much as you can, take out the trash without them even telling you. It's like try to set your life schedule. Try to set your life as a schedule so you can be prepared for anything that comes at you. So, like, through sports, it's kind of like I'm just trying to teach them the best way they can do it. So, and it's a mental thing as well. And a lot of people think that being physically strong, you're going to make it far in life. But if you're mentally strong, you can make it anywhere you want to be. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much if you dream big, if you think big, you're going to be big. You know what I'm saying? So it's really nobody can stop you. It's just yourself. You know what I'm saying? So if you can't carry yourself properly, then pretty much you need to be guided the right way. I'm just here to, like, it's just hard to do this by myself. And I'm glad I met the Streets Don't Love You Back. And I'm glad that I'm starting to work with them because now they're starting to bring more light onto my darkness that's around me. So pretty much what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to bring into the darkness, pretty much.
Sounds good, man, you know, and we appreciate that. And we want you to hang tight and Shaka, give him an update because he didn't hear everything. Give him a little brief introduction on who you are and where you come from, B.
I'm Lionel Basie. I come from Phoenix, Arizona, from the west side.
Hold on for a minute. I want Shaka to give you a brief introduction, where he come from.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, I'm from Detroit. I'm an author, a mentor, an activist. I'm actually a MIT Media Lab Fellow, which was a recent accomplishment. When I was incarcerated for 19 years, you know, I just try to use my experience to mentor youth and really get out and make a difference in the community.
Okay. So, Rob, you can make it happen for me to fly out there or something, right? So we can get down and start making some stuff happen for this youth.
Yeah, for sure. That's what we do.
Yeah, that's
so I'm trying to make this a global thing. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to make it bigger than what it normally is in just some one or two states. I'm making it worldwide. You know what I'm saying? And, again, I can't take over the world by myself. I need people that have been in situations that I've never been in to be around me, you know what I'm saying? So we can help each other, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So
also, Shaq, we're going to be working with Coach L with a few schools that he's working with here in Phoenix. And, you know, we're going to, you know, look forward to bringing you out this way, man. You know what I mean? I was going to tell you later, but I might as well tell you on the air since Coach L called in. So, you know, we're working with him, and I know now that you can travel, and we're going to get you down here to Phoenix to spread that message also, you know?
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it, man. I've been looking forward to coming out there for a while now. You know, I had those restrictions related to parole, but, you know, I've been blessed to you know, complete the requirements for my parole, so I'm free to travel whenever I want to.
That's good. That's good, man.
That's what's happening, man. So, is there anything you need to ask Shaka L?
No, man, I just can't wait to meet him, man, so I can, just learn some of his knowledge, man. I just want to know something. You know what I'm saying? So I can share my knowledge as well with him.
Talk to the man who talks to you, baby, because he knows about the whole nine yards with cats trying to be that guy, you know?
Yeah, Evan, we can't be that guy sometimes. So, but yeah, just, man, I just can't wait to meet you. I just tuned in, and everything I heard, man, it's like it kind of got my attention. I was kind of feeling sleepy, but when I heard, when I heard him talking, I kind of, you know, so I got up. I had to start moving around, like my heart started pounding because, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like the juice, you know what I'm saying? It felt like I got the juice, but imagine when I run into you and then we run into each other, we can kind of, man, that's what I'm going to say, man, is I just want to start building relationships with people that were in the same situation where I was at back in the days as well. So.
Oh, yeah. I think that's important, I mean, because what's going on out there, what's going on out here is pretty much the same. You know, that's one of the things I love about what Rob and Lucinda are doing is that they always connecting those bridges and really helping bring everything together. Because we all going through it, and, you know, Rob, we grew up pretty much in the same neighborhood, so, you know, he understands why this work is so important.
Hey, so you say you're from where? From Detroit?
From the city, man.
Oh, man, I actually been out there a couple times, man. I've been out there to Krunk Gym with Emmanuel Stewart.
Okay, that's what's happening.
Yeah, actually been out there, man. It's pretty wild out there, man. It's nothing like Phoenix. I promise you that.
Come over our way. See that shit come over our way, y'all.
Right.
Hey, we having a good time with my man Shop tonight, and we're kicking it live with Righting My Wrongs. And right now, we're going to take a commercial break, and we're going to dedicate this song that's coming up next to my boy Shaka, and it's called Never Give Up, because he didn't give up. He did 19 calendars in the joint. He came out. He didn't make no excuses. He out here helping the youth, mentoring, and he's doing his thing. So we want to pay the homage and respect to my man Shaka tonight from Detroit, and we're going to play this song, Never Give Up. We'll be right back.
The homies, what's good with y'all?
What's up with y'all,
huh? What's good?
Can't make no shots, man.
Can't make no shots.
I mean, you know, can't give up, though. You got to keep trying, you know. Practice makes perfect.
I love
you. You know, that's for all y'all. You know what I mean? Just, you know, stay focused. Don't give up. You know, never give up. No matter what it is in life, you can't give up on anything. That's real. You know what I mean? So just keep your shot going. All y'all, you know.
Okay.
I look forward to coming to the game one day. NBA, man. I'm trying to see y'all there.
Yeah.
All right? Okay, loved ones. Y'all be good, all right? I just came to check on y'all.
That's
all
right.
This
coming, and welcome right back here to the Streets and Love You Back Show Worldwide. And once again, we're kicking it here tonight and paying homage to my homeboy, Shaka, in the house tonight here at the show. And go out right now if you're on the line and get that Right in My Wrong, because my man done put a memoir down, autobiography, opening up kids, opening up grown folks, opening up everybody's eyes to what's really happening out here and what's really happening behind them gates, you know? And I seen online, Shock, that you got something coming up, man, in Lansing, if I'm not mistaken, enlighten the people. Yeah, Shock?
Yeah, hello?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry about that, I was on mute.
Oh, it's all good. Enlighten the people on what you got coming up. You got something coming up in April, correct, in Lansing?
Yeah, so April 27th, I'll be in Lansing doing the kind of kickoff to my Atonement Project, which is a project that's a collaboration between me, between myself and MIT Media Lab as part of my fellowship, as part of my director's fellowship. And so basically the idea behind the Atonement Project is to create healing in our community between victims of violent crime and perpetrators of violent crime. And one of the ways we want to do that is just to really start with a serious conversation from offenders' point of view of, first of all, acknowledging their wrongdoing, apologizing, and then atoning through their efforts of, you know, whether it's mentoring, whatever capacity they feel like is necessary for them to atone. But that's a key component to the project and really getting people back engaged in the conversation of community healing.
That's what's up, Shock. Now, any other projects that you got coming up, Shock?
Well, I actually got I'm always working on something, but, you know, the Atonement Project is probably the most intense. We're going to be doing this throughout the community as well as the schools and as well as on a national level. MIT Media Lab has been great in their support of my work. And for those who are not familiar with MIT Media Lab, I think it would be a great opportunity for you to Google and really understand, like, what we're really setting out to accomplish. And one of the other things we're going to be dealing with is this whole idea behind mass incarceration and how do we come to that culture by coming up with preventive measures to prevent, you know, young people who are in these poverty, impoverished environments, as well as, you know, young black men and women and Latino men and women who have been marginalized by society, and it's kind of going from this playground to prison pipeline, and we want to kind of disrupt that pipeline by giving some alternatives and really dealing with things on a more concrete level.
That's what's up, Shock, man. And, like, once again, man, this is your night, man, and I couldn't wait to have you on the show again tonight because I see you do so much, man. The wife see how you have grown since you stepped out the gate. And like I say once again, you didn't come out here for no hand-me-out. You didn't come out here thinking nobody owed you nothing. You came out here, man. You came out running, man. And you came out learning your environment. And like you said, take you a few minutes because you've gone for 19 years. So, you know, you still had some of them. If you're too close to me, I got to make sure you can't crowd my space. You feel me?
Right.
And that's what a lot of these cats fail to realize, Shock, man. You know, let them know about that crowd and space, man. Let them know what that is, Shock.
I mean, the reality is that when you're in prison, man, prison is the most barbaric, inhumane environment you can imagine. I mean, and so when you amongst, you know, 1,500, you know, angry, volatile, you know, young males, you know, guys get stabbed in those type of crowds. You know, then it's you know, human nature isn't meant for us to be piled on top of each other. And that's what prison is. Like, they try to fit as many people into as small of a space as possible. And when you do that, I mean, only bad things can happen. And so the reality is it changes your dynamic as a human being and how you relate to others. And it really makes you hard and it makes you callous toward humanity. And then, you know, to throw people back into society after they've gone through that, to me, is one of our greatest tragedies. And, again, it's one of America's greatest shames.
My man. And you're doing the right thing, Shock, man. You know, and like I said, we're real proud of you, man. And, you know, you got a little king now. You know what I mean? You know, tell us about your little king, how he's doing.
My son is great. You know, I think, you know, one of the things I learned from my father is that the role of a father is to ensure that their children inherit a better world than they have. And so everything that I do is a reflection of the future that I want my child to inherit. Like, I don't want my son to grow up feeling that he has to shoot, kill, rob, or abuse another young black male or black woman or anybody for that matter. But, you know, Detroit is 85-95% black. And so I don't want him to grow up fear. I don't want him to grow up to fear another young black man. You know, when he looks at another young black man, I want him to see a brother as opposed to an enemy. And so my work is to ensure that, you know, the young people I mentor today, they're going to be his mentors tomorrow. And I want them to be able to mentor him in a way that's healthy, that's humane. And I want them to be able to give him the type of guidance that, you know, elders should give to the youth. So, you know, my work is driven by my son and other youth like him. You know, I want these babies to grow up in a better world and with better opportunities than what we grew up in.
Right. And speaking of that, you know, for a young man to come out of prison, or you're in your 30s. Okay, well, close to 40.
No, I'm actually 40 now, Lucinda. It's been a couple of years.
Now. Okay. Okay. So for any person, no matter what age, to come out of prison, especially after 19 years, you know,
right.
We know that the turnover rate, I mean, once you come out of prison after that many years, a lot of people end up back in prison because they don't know how to function and they revert to their old ways. So can you tell the audience a little bit about what your plan was when you came home, you know, how you were able to stick to that plan and execute it and what your goals were? Because you overcame a lot, and you have done a tremendous amount of positive things for yourself, for your family, for your community, and you're just doing so many things. Can you let the audience know how you did that and how other people can overcome that and do positive things and not end up back in prison?
Yeah, so the thing with, you know, a lot of people look at my life out here now. You know, I've been home now 2.5 years, and in 2.5 years I've accomplished a great deal. I've traveled all over. You know, I last, in 2012, I won the Black Male Leadership Award, and then this, you know, last year I was, you know, awarded a Director's Fellowship at MIT Media Lab. But what people don't really understand is that I was prepared for my life after prison 5 years prior to getting released from prison. And I based that on the idea that there's no such thing as luck, but the idea of what luck is that preparation meets opportunity, and that's when the magic happens. And so in anything in life, if you can step back out of the emotion of the moment and really assess things and think through the process of what it is that you want to accomplish, and then start strategically taking those steps toward accomplishing it, not getting dissuaded when things get rough, not giving up when it get hard, then you can accomplish anything. Like, I don't believe there's nothing that I want to do that I can't do. But the thing that the motivating factor for that was reading. Like, reading Malcolm X's autobiography really created a paradigm shift and just told me that I was capable of what people perceived as being incapable. And once I was able to tap into that type of energy, I just felt like it was nothing that I couldn't accomplish. And I think my first great accomplishment for me on a personal level, like I've accomplished some good stuff, was when I wrote my first novel while I was in solitary confinement. And I had realized in that moment that I had never completed anything in my life. And from that point forward, I was like, you know, if I start a task, my responsibility is to complete that task. And what you'll find is that when you complete the task that you start, those are the steps on the ladder to success. And, you know, you have to start early. You have to really think things through. You have to plan. And then you can't give in to obstacles and hardship. Like, when I came home, it was very difficult. Actually, it's difficult to this day. But what I realized that there's nothing more difficult than, you know, the 19 years I spent in prison. So, you know, for the most part, this stuff is a cakewalk. I feel like I've endured the hardest aspects of my life, and so because I've come through that, I'm like, you know, I don't feel like there's nothing I can't accomplish. But planning, believing in yourself, like literally having unshakable belief, because you're going to have doubters around you. You're going to have people that I call toxic people that's going to tell you why you can't accomplish something, and you have to have the fortitude to endure through that. And you have to really have the drive and the will to say, you know what, no matter what, I'm going to accomplish this task. I'm going to get it done because it's important enough to get done. And if it's important enough to get done, you'll find a way to make it happen.
That's right. Now, how many books do you have out? I know of four.
Yeah, so currently Righting My Wrongs is my fourth book that's published. I actually have two novels that I haven't published yet, and I have a new book that I will be working on very soon. So currently I have four books published, Crack Volume 1, Crack Volume 2. Those are my fiction. That's my detective novels. I've always wanted to, you know, tell a story from a detective's perspective since I'm from the streets. I just wanted to be able to do the complete opposite of what people would expect from me. And I love fiction. I think fiction is one of the greatest ways to tell the truth. So my first two releases were novels, and then I did a short piece of essays, Living Peace, A Used Guide to Turn a Hurt into Hope. And that's what I use for my Living Peace Digital Literary Arts Project that I do in two high schools, Cody High School and Tri-County, in the Metro Detroit area. And then Righting My Wrongs, of course, was my memoir, which is the newest release, and it's just going crazy right now. We sold out of the first print, and we just got the second print in, and it's selling pretty good right now. So I actually was out all day selling books, so I'm really excited about it,
Shock, because like I say, man, you came home running, man. And, hey, we got another caller on the line, Shock, that want to ask you something, okay?
Definitely.
Okay, caller, you got the last four digits, 6043. You on the air to ask Shaka a question? Yeah, caller, you on
hello?
The air? Yes, you on the air, caller.
Oh, hello, hello. My name is Dan Angulo, and I am from Phoenix, Arizona. And I just want to say hi, Mr. Boyd, Shaka. I was listening to this radio station, and it blew my mind. It absolutely blew my mind. And I feel like this is a hard thing to explain without explaining it incorrectly. I really like what the Streets Don't Love You Back are doing, and I want to be a part of it in any way possible. And I really believe in what you guys are doing, and I believe that this is very righteous, and the people, they need to hear what you guys are saying. They need to be, their eyes need to be opened, because there's a lot of people right now in the dark. And like I said, I believe in what you guys are doing. You guys are shedding light in the dark areas, and I just want to commend you guys on that.
We appreciate that, D, you know what I mean? And, would you like to ask Shaka a question? You know, Shaka is the author of Righting My Wrongs, and he spent 19 years in prison. Me and Shaka grew up around the same area in Detroit, and, you know, he's doing great things. So what would you like to ask Shaka tonight?
Okay. Shaka, what was the moment that actually that the light came on in your mind, that the moment that what happened to make you turn all of this around? When did that happen, and how did that happen?
Well, it actually kind of built in stages. You know, early in my incarceration, I was exposed to literature. A guy gave me a book by Donald Goins, and Donald Goins' books, they were so, like, mesmerizing to me at that point in my life. It was about the streets of Detroit, and they were really captivating. But what happened is that once I finished reading all his books, I was looking for more books by, you know, black authors, in which I was even shocked that there was as many black authors as were out. And guy, he gave me Malcolm X's book. And once I read Malcolm X's book, it really opened my eyes to reading more about culture, political science, philosophy, and things of that nature. And so fast forward about 8 years. So 8 years into my incarceration, I caught another case in prison. And I was sentenced for an additional 2 years, and I ended up serving 4.5 years of solitary confinement. And during that time, I got a letter from my son, who was like 8 and a half at the time. And, you know, he was like, hey, my mama told me you was in prison for a murder. And he was like, Dad, please don't kill nobody anymore. And it was the first time that I had ever thought about the impact that my crime was having on my family, and especially the young people in my family. And, you know, when you grow up in the streets, you know, it's that comes with the streets. You know, that's the consequence of street life. We deal with it, we accept it, we celebrate it. But when you listen to it from the eyes of a child, you know, if you're any type of man, if you're any type of human being, any type of woman, it makes you step back out of yourself and think about the impact that you're having on them and their future. And so at that point, I was like, you know what? I have a responsibility to turn this thing around. I need to get rid of this anger. I need to overcome this bitterness. And I need to step up as a man and do something impactful in my community and turn around some of the things that I helped mess up. And because I know I had a lot of influence in the streets, I felt like if I do it, it'll make other guys in the street feel like, you know what, we need to turn the guns in and pick up books and pick up pens and really impact these kids in a positive way. So for me, that was the real turning point, was getting that letter from my son.
Wow, that's pretty touching. That's heavy.
Amen. That touched me. That definitely touched me. Oh, man. And
so
I'm not going to... Go ahead.
So tonight we just having a great, great time, you know? And, Dee, what we want to do is we want you... Can you hold on the line? Because we want you to roll through the show with us tonight. Can you hold on the line?
Yes.
All right.
Dee, you got to let them know what you do, baby.
We want you to hold on the line, Shock. And we'll be right back. We're going to go to another song because this is Shaka Night. And we are paying homage to Shaka and his contributed to the community. And we're going to go to Ain't Nothing Like Home, you know what I mean, by Maserati Rick Jr.
hey, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome right back here to the Streets on Love You Back radio show worldwide in the house. And once again, we paying tribute to my homie, Shaka out of Detroit, baby, where I grew up at, raised and born. And that track right there is by one of my homeboys' son, Maserati Rick Jr., Maserati Sr., you know, passed away back in the day. And we just want to say we out here with your little youngster, man, and we got him on the positive track, and he doing something good out here, you know? So we right back with you, Shaka, man, and we having a great time tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. It's always good to kick with y'all and, you know, be able to share experience of the work y'all doing, man. Like, I love what you've been doing out there, and I think that work is really important, so, you know, I got to support any chance I get.
Yeah, well, you've been just doing nothing but running since you got home, and you know, we're watching everything that you've been doing, and, you know, we got your back. We support you, and you know, we're just so proud of you that you came home and that you're doing everything that you're doing, because you're such a positive role model and mentor to so many people, and your example is just shining, and so many people are going to look up to you and change their life because of you, and we appreciate that.
It's the greatest, you know, it's the greatest and most humbling honor, you know. I just feel like, man, you know, when you mess something up, you have a responsibility to pick it up, you know, and fix it up. And, you know, that's what we grew up here. You know, if you mess up your room, your parents tell you get in there and clean it up, you know. And it's the same thing in the community. When you mess up the community, you have a responsibility to come out and fix that up. And so, you know, just doing this work, you never really, you know, it's hard to gauge the impact you're having, but, you know, like a day like today, I went up to one of the schools I mentored at, and the teacher was like, hey, I got something for you, you know, and I didn't know what it was, but when I went in, she just gave me a stack of letters from her students, and, you know, I've just been reading those letters today, and just hearing the impact that, you know, my work has had on their lives, like, that keeps me going, you know, and to me, it's something that's more rewarding than anything I've ever accomplished in the streets. You know, I made a lot of money in the streets, and you know, hustle, you know, from sun up to sundown. I mean, that's the life of the streets, but I've never felt a sense of accomplishment. I've never felt a sense of peace. And, you know, now when you really working with young men and women who society has given up on, and they write you very detailed letters that's very personal, and they just say, hey, you know, now I'm doing more to ensure that my future is brighter because of your, you know, present in my life, like, that makes it all worth it. So, you know, I just have to keep on grinding it out, and we just got to keep doing our part, because the kids are definitely listening.
They are, and you know, it only takes one mistake, you know, and just like you said, you were hot-headed, you had a lot of anger, and you just, you know, the guy got you at the wrong time, and you made that mistake, you pulled that trigger, and how did it feel to find out that he died? I mean, how did that, I mean, it had to be devastating, because people, these young kids pull the trigger so often without even thinking or realizing what the consequences are. What did you think when that happened to you?
Well, I instantaneously just was like, wow, you know, this is devastating, you know. I mean, I just realized that I've really hurt somebody's family for the rest of their lives. But one of the things I want to say before I say that is that I don't look at my decision as a mistake. And the reason I say that, I always try to be really careful with language, because sometimes that lets people off the hook. And part of evolving as a man is that I've took full responsibility for the decisions I made in my life. And whatever the root cause of those decisions were, you know, that is what it is. But the reality is, at the end of the day, I was responsible for pulling that trigger. I was responsible, you know, that morning when I picked up the gun and put it in my waistband. And I say that because I don't want to let kids off the hook with thinking that you can just carry a gun, you can make a mistake, and somehow you can repent for it and get over it. No, you make bad decisions, and carrying a gun is one of them. And shooting a gun and shooting somebody is an even worse decision. And so I made horrible decisions that night. And when I realized that the consequences of those decisions, you know, that it was devastating. You know, I had dealt with, you know, friends being murdered, and so I know what it felt like to know somebody that's not even your family member be murdered. And so to think about the fact that I was contributing something like that to somebody else's family, and I was really, you know, bringing this type of harm on them that they would endure for the rest of their lives was devastating. It's the worst feeling in the world, and you know, sometimes people ask me, am I happy? And I'm happy to a certain degree, you know, but it's a part of me that that will always be sad. And that part of me is the reality is that I took somebody's life is something that I can never replace. You know, if I stole your car, you know, I can pay you back for that car. You know, if I, you know, stole somebody's wallet, you know, I can replace that, but you can't replace a life. You know, once you pull that trigger and you take somebody's life, that's a lifetime consequence that you have to deal with. You know what I mean? So I have these moments and these days where it's like really I get depressed thinking about it. And so that's part of the life sentence, you know. And I don't complain about it. I actually think y'all are probably the first people I even told that part of what I feel, you know, from day to day. But I feel like it's so important to get that out and to really talk about that because people think that, you know, you just, okay, you did your time, it's over. No, it's not over. You know, this is something I have to deal with for the rest of my life, you know. And, yeah, so that's what it is.
My man, Shock, and that's good, man, that you letting the young kids, man, know that you take full responsibility for the choice you made, not no mistake you made, the choice you made. You know what I mean? It's a difference between choice and mistake. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mistake is I wrote on your paper, I ain't going to do that no more. That's a mistake. You know what I mean?
Right.
But a choice is something that a man makes. And when he make that choice, you have to live with the choice he made. And you made that choice, and you took the consequences that went with that choice, you know? And,
yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and that's just like my three brothers, you know what I mean? I got three brothers doing life sentence right there in Detroit prisons, you know? So the
right.
choice that they made, they living with right now, you know what I mean? And it hurts me to see them now, you feel me? But, you know, once again, it's them choices, man, that get us twisted in life, you know? And them choices, a lot of times, like you said, ain't always great choices. You think they're great choices at that moment. But when you look at that stretch down the way and they say LIFE, that means it's straight up game over. You would die with cement boots on in that, you know?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And it's real. You know, I know a lot of guys that's never getting out of prison, you know, and they're going to die in prison. But more importantly, you know, their families are in prison. You know, that's what guys don't think about. You know, when you get locked up, you're not going to prison by yourself. You know, your family, anybody that loves you, care about you, is concerned about you.
They locked up too.
They locked up with you, you know, and that's selfish. Like, that's one of the most selfish things to do is to put yourself in a situation to make your family suffer because you're suffering. And
exactly.
So, you know, yeah, so I try to be real with, you know, with the youth that I deal with, and, you know, as well as the adults, like, you know, because some of the adults are not making the wise decisions, and, you know, we just have to be honest, man. Like, that's my big thing. Like, I don't try to glorify nothing that I experienced in the street. You know, I just give you the raw truth. This is what it is. You can digest it how you want to, but at the end of the day, when you wake up and have to deal with the consequences of the decisions you made, don't say I didn't tell you. You know what I'm saying?
That is. When the judge say, you know, 40 to 80, that's LIFE all day. You know what I mean?
That's it.
So you might as well say, wow, Shaka and Boy told me don't go down that street. You know what I mean? But you went
right.
down that street anyway when it wasn't nothing but a one-way street. That
right.
ain't grass shit. Grass is a two-way
right.
street. You
right.
know what I mean? Yeah, you went down Canfield, you know?
Right.
And that's a one-way street, bruh. So it's just amazing, man, how you come home, like I say, man, and hit the ground running. And, you know, I changed my life, you know what I mean, before the LIFE set in, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And but my son fell victim to the streets and did 15 years, you know? So
right.
it's like, once again, them choices, man, you know? And we so proud of you, man, and just want to say, Shaka, do you got any last words you would like to say to the viewers, and give them that website again for that great, great book, man, to go get that Right My Wrong.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my thing to the viewers is that, you know, if you really want to understand the thinking of young men and women who pick up guns and pull the trigger, you definitely want to check out Right My Wrongs at ShakaSengor.com. That's ShakaSengor.com. And I can guarantee you that if you really are advocate on behalf of these young people, you know, you live in a community that's you know, challenged by gun violence and things like that, it's definitely a book you really want to have on yourself and at your disposal. And more importantly, just take the time out to listen. You know, stop judging the kids because of how they dress. I mean, we dressed crazy to our parents back in the day. And really just take the time to listen to them first. You know, one of the things I found is, you know, if you build up their self-esteem, they'll pull their pants up automatically. And you know, they'll turn their hats around and their language will change. But we have a responsibility as adults to, you know, to do that. But it starts with us listening as opposed to talking. You know, sometimes with adults, we talk too much. And, you know, so that's pretty much my thing. Take the time out to listen. Order the book. Check it out. You know, that's ShakaSengor.com. That's ShakaSengor.com. Order your book. You know, hit me up. You can hit me up for email if you want to speak and engage with whatever the case may be. But definitely take the time out to check it out. It's worthwhile reading.
That's what it is, man. And we want you to hold on, Shock. We're going to go to Daniel.
Yes.
Yeah, any last words you would like to say to Shock?
Yeah, Shaka, my name is Dan Ongulo. You know, I currently do the public relations for Guerrilla Elite Training. I'm an excellent writer. I'm definitely positive that, you know, that we can do something together in the future. And I'm looking forward to meeting you, and I want an autographed copy of your book. I'm definitely going to read your book. I'm going to go ahead and buy it online right now, and I'm going to go ahead and read that.
Man, definitely appreciate it. I'm looking forward to coming out there. You know, Rob Lucinda, they're great at connecting people. You know, when Rick Ross came out here, the real Rick Ross, let me clarify that, when he came out here to the D, you know, he came out here and was like, man, you know, my dude, told me to connect with you, man, and it was 100, you know, a real solid brother doing some positive things. So, you know, it feels good to be connected to you, D, man. I look forward to meeting you. I look forward to coming out there to Phoenix real soon. I really need to get out there ASAP, but it's cold out here in the D right now. So, I might try to get out there real soon, man, enjoy some of that warmth and weather. But definitely appreciate the love and support, man, and Lucinda, Rob. You know, I love the work that y'all are doing. That's why anytime you ask me to call in, I'm there. Even when you don't ask me, you know, I call in with other people on the show, you know, just out of love what y'all are doing, man. And I appreciate the support and positive encouragement. You know, y'all always, you know, dropping jewels on me and trying to help me out. And that's something that's invaluable. You know, that means a lot. So
we appreciate that, Scott, man. And we want to just say we thank my homeboy, the real Freeway Rick Ross, you know what I mean, for – you know, linking up with Shock for me when he came out to Detroit, you know what I mean, to do his thing. And, you know, we just talked, well, you know, Shock, I talk to Rick all the time, you know. And Rick got some things coming up for all who don't know. Nick Cannon is going to be playing Freeway Rick Ross in his biography that's going to be coming out. So, yeah, so they study putting that together right there. And me and the missus got to take a trip out to Cali and see him in person like we always do. And we just saying big ups to Rick, big ups to Nick Cannon for stepping up to the plate, you know what I mean, to do this. And we just want to say, Shock, man, we thank you for coming on the show, man. And we send much love to your whole family, bro. And tell your queen, man, we send much love to her as well for sticking with you, you dig what I'm saying, and putting everything in the right perspective with you at the same time, bro.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. Tell Rick Ross, man, them shirts he sent out to the D, man. Tell me we need some 2X and 3X out here, man. I'll send them little bitty mediums and large.
Hey,
I sent him a text about that, too, man. I sent him a text. Was like, man, I sent some little big fella shirts out here, man. I'm a big dude.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm about to let him know that, man. I'm going to holler at him, you know, tomorrow and let him know. I'm going to say, man, Shock hollered at me on the show last night, and he said, you ain't got nothing but small people out there, man. The Detroit
right.
boys, they large, man. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah, man. You know. But I definitely appreciate y'all, man. You know, I'll be tuning in next Wednesday. If I'm in the house, I'm always out and about on the run, but I tune in as much as possible
You always do, Shock, man.
You always
do. Before you get off the line, Shock, we want to dedicate another song for you, man, on the go away trip, you know?
Oh, man,
so
appreciate that.
We want you to hold on, man, and D, you hold on too, you know? And we're going to go to another track from my homeboy out of Detroit, you know what I mean? Lil Maserati Rick. And we're going to hit Shock with the Brown Sugar dedicated to him and his queen.
Have a dream, show some love, and take a ride down memory lane. Just me and her, listening to music that I love. Hey, love, you can be my brown sugar. Hey, love, you can be my brown sugar. Hey, love, you can be my brown sugar. Hey, love, you can be my brown sugar.
Back in the days when I was a teenager, before I had money, cell phone, or a pager. Just me and my girl listening to hip-hop. Mama used to say it reminded her of bebop. But dancing to Michael, see the music is a cycle. Remembering good times, Soul Train is really a good thing. I'm feeling too good, nah, I might just need a drink. Might just reminisce, I know that she's feeling this. She listening to Mary J. Baby girl looking good and she came my way. Let's play some OJs. Let's unwind, slow it down, two-step. Nah, clap with me one time. She feeling good too, like it's summertime. Girl, I get around in my hometown. You can come too. I love you like soul food for the love that we had.
Have a dream.
I put on some Pendergrass and light up a candle. She feeling that heat wave. We dance the night away. Shout out to the DJ for playing the right one. He put on another song. It sound like Marvin Gaye or maybe some Isleys. No matter where we be, she be right beside me. We go good together like sugar, honey, and tea. Love and memory lane. I play her another song. Now she feeling candy rain in the soul for real. Telling her how I feel. Now she wanna take a trip with me around the world. Feeling like I'm in love. And I hope that she feel what I feel. So I know that it's real. So I know that it's real.
So I know that it's real.
Now that's love.
Memory lane, yeah. Thinking the summer days, telling me how she feel. Listen to Lauryn Hill, beautiful how she sings. I put on some Mal Green, getting her in the mood, not rushing into a thing. I'm feeling like Rick James, we high up Mary Jane. She the girl in my dreams, she my earth, wind and fire. Whenever we be together, no arguing with each other. Music keep us together, getting us through the weather. Feeling the summer breeze, call you my summer girl. Like Jodeci, I'm a fiend, travel around the world. Ribbon up in the sky, writing it on the wall. I put on some MJ, she my pretty young thing. We remember the time, so we had to escape down memory lane. All alone, just me and my girl with a song. That's the life that I love, come on.
Welcome back to the Streets of Love Back Radio Show Worldwide. And once again, we're paying homage to my homeboy at Detroit, Shock in the house. And once again, Shock, before we depart, man, give him that website with that right in my wrongs, my man.
Yeah, that's ShakaSengor.com. That's ShakaSengor.com. You can also hit me up on Facebook at Shaka Sengor, Twitter, LinkedIn. Connect with me. Check out Writing My Wrongs. Definitely one of the hottest books out right now dealing with mass incarceration, the personal story of what it's like to be incarcerated and how you overcome those obstacles. So, yeah, definitely check that out.
My man. And also, Shaq, give them that information about your upcoming event in April as well up in Lansing.
Yeah, April 27th, we'll be kicking off the Atonement Project. It's a project I'm doing as part of my fellowship with MIT Media Lab, which has been really amazing, and we really want to counter that culture of gun violence and really get people to having a conversation about community healing. So I'll be setting it off, April 27th.
That's what it is, man. And we want to say much love and much respect for you, Shaq. And once again, send love to your queen, man, and the whole family down there in Detroit. And when me and the wife come visit my mom's, you know, we got to stop through, man, and eat some good chicken and barbecue or something. You know, if it ain't nothing but to hit Coney Island, you know that's my favorite spot when I get to the crib, so they ain't got it here. You know what
I mean? No doubt, man. You come through, you know you're definitely welcome. Welcome to our home, man. You and Lucinda, come on through, and I'll scramble y'all up a meal, you know.
Oh, man, I already know you put it down, Shaq, like Rover, baby, for sure.
Yeah, come on through.
So, hey, man, it's all good, man, and it's all love. And, D, I want you to say your last words before Shaka depart. And, you know, we give a shout-out to you and Coach L, D, but enlighten them right fast on what you and Coach L is doing and what we all doing together as a unit.
Yep, Guerrilla Elite Training Organization. We're building the most elite athletes in the entire world from the inside out. We're doing something nobody in the world is doing. And I put my word and my stamp and my seal of approval that we will be, our athletes will be, anyone in our team is going to be in leadership position in whatever field we're in on a worldwide global basis. We're in the light. If we're not in the light, people we're working with are stepping into the light shortly. And that's all I can pretty much say, that success is assured.
My man, you know what I mean? So once again, we got to get my boy Shaka out here, him and his queen, and his little king out here to enjoy some of this Arizona weather and come out here and talk to the kids as well and kick his feet up by the pool, you know what I'm saying? So that's what time that is, man. And we thank you for coming to the show, Shaka. We thank you, D. We thank Coach L for coming out tonight and enjoying us right
thank
here
you.
On our worldwide radio show. And we send much love out to the Phoenix Boys Center and the whole squad. You know, Victor, Lex, go to Vegas this weekend, and we want you to go out there to Vegas and get that win and come on back to Arizona. So we give him big ups to my man Lex for going to the regionals in Las Vegas, and he won the Golden Gloves a couple weeks ago. So, Lex, do your thing. Vic, we're proud of you for winning at the Celebrity Theater over the weekend. So we're proud of our whole camp. Dave and everybody, you know what I mean, who won it at our gym. So much love to everybody, and God bless. And always remember, the streets don't love you back, and give it to the wife for the last mementos.
Just want to remind everybody that we're live every Wednesday night, 8:30 Pacific time, 11:30 Eastern time. Please join us, and if you can't join us live, our radio episodes can be archived 24/7, so you can go back and listen to any of our shows anytime, as many times as you want. So please enjoy the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. We've had great guests and great stories and a lot of educational teaching for anyone out there.
Yes, and we want to say once again to all our viewers, make sure you go log on and get my boy Shaka a book, Writing My Wrongs. And he also got another book out that he wrote when he first came home called Crack. You know what I mean? So go ahead and get that book as well and get you a double up. You feel me? Like we say back in the day, get you a double up, you dig? And
sure.
Go home
sure.
And read that, you feel me? Because you'll get some great information and things that'll keep you living out here on the survival tip. You know, is that correct, Shaq?
Yeah, for some of them.
Dig that. And if you ain't got that Streets Don't Love You Back or The Never Hit a Woman, two books that I've wrote, log on to our website at www.com.
thestreetsdontloveyoubackneem.com, and you can get them two books as well. And also, The Wait Is Finally Over. Today, we've launched our toddler's clothesline from 2T to 6T, and we got our youth shirts in as well, and we just got the adult shirts in as well. So you'll be seeing that on our store page on Facebook tonight if the wife feel like doing that. And, you know, it's like that now. So you can even put your little baby in the Streets Don't Love You Back now, along with you. So we'll double that up for you. You feel me? So once again, we're doing it live right here, paying homage to my homeboy, Shock, baby. Shock, we love you, man. Appreciate you coming on the show. And we out.
All right. Peace, y'all.
Have a great week. And always remember, the streets don't love you back.